Welcome back to another episode of the After the Snow podcast. I'm your co-host, Dave Mays. And alongside with me every week is my co-host, Freeway Rick Ross. What's up,
Rick? What up, Dave? It's good. It's good. It's good, man.
Yeah, man. Another week.
Yes.
Things are moving along. We getting into the fall, the summer. You know, we just had Labor Day, so summer's officially over, I guess.
And, yeah, this economy, though, man, that's the thing right now. Everybody is on the economy. Where is this economy going?
Yeah. Yeah, money, that's a big
money tight out here, boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hard to come by.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with these, I guess, the midterm elections coming up, and you know, everybody thinking about who's gonna run in for president in two more years, and you know, same old stuff, I guess, that we've been seeing.
Are they going to indict Donald Trump? Is he going to jail? Or, you know, so much, man.
Yeah, man. But other than that, you know, just yeah, looking forward to this fall, closing out this year strong. I know we all got a lot of things. Everybody's, I'm sure, been working on all year, and now's the time to like really just kind of focus in, try to get everything you want accomplished before we hit the holiday season, which is, you know, beyond us before we know it.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct. And this time is just flying by, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to shout out our producer, Tarek Ross, man. We don't give him his props enough on the show. And, you know, he's always there for us wherever, whenever, and helping us make sure we get the show to you guys every week. So big shout to Tarek Ross, producer.
No doubt. And we might be kin too.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, we had the white party last weekend, man, down in Marania, Mississippi. Okay.
Yeah.
The turnout wasn't the greatest, but, you know, we still had a good time. And, you know, the people that was there, you know, we made the best of the situation. It was a meeting for my man Galen's new golf course that he brought me in on. So, you know, they set it out, man. It was definitely a beautiful place. Everything was well, man. So, you know, did that this weekend. My truck ran last week for the first time. Headache got the headache, man. You wouldn't believe what they did. They sold me some bad tires. Started this chain event. They sold me the wrong size tires on my trailer. The guys get to the middle of nowhere in Arizona and have a blowout. And just went downhill from there, man. One flat after the next, another one. I'm putting new tires on there. I put like 12 new tires on the trailer, and it blew them all out. One roadside service cost me $1,500 a day.
Oh, man. So are you back up and running now?
Yeah. We figured it out, you know, finally, that they were putting the wrong size tires on. But, you know, it just goes to show you, when you don't do your homework, and when you count on other people, you know, to do something for you, you know, you can get caught with your pants down. So, lesson, pay attention to what you're doing, to small details. There's a few numbers on those tires made a big difference.
Yeah. Before we get into the show, also, I want to do it up front. Just make sure everybody is following you on Instagram. I know it's one of your main platforms at Freeway Ricky.
Yes.
You've been posting a lot of interesting stuff. Lately I've been, you know, noticing, of course, all your travels and your speaking and activism and all that kind of stuff all over the country. But also there was some other nice video content you put up this past week, if I remember correctly. So,
yeah, we try to stay up to par, you know. Man, it's so much competition out here, you know, that you have to constantly look to rebuild yourself, you know. Matter of fact, next week, Dave, I'm going into a prison, you know. It's going to be my first time getting paid to go inside a prison this week. So.
Oh, wow. Where's that at?
Boston. I'll be in Boston, wow. Massachusetts next week.
State prison or?
State, yes, state. Yeah. They're trying to. They're thinking about giving me a contract to do it all the time, which I hope they do. You know, I could really help those guys in there. You know,
yeah, I believe that.
I could definitely show them how to do their time without getting in trouble and getting out.
Yeah, yeah, man, that's great. I hope that goes well. Follow Freeway Ricky on Instagram. If you want to follow me, it's at The Real Dave Mays. And hopefully all you guys are following at Breakbeat Media, which is our network that we're part of. You know, we've got the Cornbread TV starring Funny Marco. We got Top Billing with Bill Bellamy. Of course, we got Don't Call Me White Girl. We got Trapping Anonymous and more programs coming under the Breakbeat umbrella. So definitely follow us as well. That being said, let's talk about Snowfall. That's what we do around these parts. At least, you know, most of the time we talk about the TV series. We're back in season 2. We just watched episode 8, which is called Surrender. Yeah, it's a lot going on. You said this is one of your favorite episodes, Rick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the reason I say that, because I'm a realist. You know, I like real stuff. And when TV shows, one of the reasons I don't watch TV is because it gets too unreal. You know, when it's unreal, I don't really like it. Most of the stuff that I watch on TV is documentaries, history, you know, things that that I can get something out of. You know, I don't really like just watching TV to be entertained. You know, I'm not a person that's looking for entertainment. So when I watch the show, I'm watching the show for authenticity, for realness, facts, you know, things like that there. So this show, with some of the things that happened, you know, I know that they weren't real, but they were close to what I would visualize as being something that was possible.
What are some of the things that stood out in this episode to you?
Lucille, you know, killing her cousin, you know, because he had set her up. You know, that happens in this game. They don't care who you are. You know, you sending them to prison. You know, sometimes people lose their wits and do things that that could dig an even deeper hole for themselves. So I like that one. The one with Auntie Louie come back home, you know, and Unc takes her back. You know, he's glad that she was back. You know, that was real to me. I didn't like Franklin, the way he talked to his mom. I was very disappointed with that scene. And I know that could be a real scene too. I know some people do talk to their moms like that. But I just thought that he was above talking to his mom like that. You know, I thought that he could take, you know, like when you're dealing with your mom, you know, you're dealing with somebody that's very special, you know, in my eyes. You know, I hold moms to an extent that, you know, you can't really hold nobody else to, because she's the only one you're going to ever have. You'll never have another mom. So you got to hold them to a high esteem than you would hold really almost anybody else in the world, even your dad. You know, no matter what happened, your mom, she's going to be there for you. You know, she's
yeah, that was a little almost out of character for Franklin, where he's just cursing at his mom like that. You know,
yeah,
that was pretty bad. I mean, you know, that's something, you know, you should never, you know, disrespect your mother under really any circumstances, but this isn't like something really awful she did to him. She just basically came to him and said, look, I don't want your money. I'll lose the house. And, you know, I don't agree with what you're doing. And
exactly.
Yeah, he just flipped out on her.
Very much so. Almost like he was talking to somebody in the streets. Or worse than he talked to the people in the streets.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess what they maybe tried to get out of that scene is the whole, you know, justification argument that Franklin, you know, launches into, you know, how, you know, you got screwed over, you played by the rules, and look what happened to you. Now I'm making my own rules, and look, I'm buying you a house, and, you know, our people have been getting fucked over for centuries, and, you know.
Yeah, but then he turned right back around and do the same thing. He already did it to her. Just he didn't do it to her the way they did it. He verbally abused her. So, you know, like, you in the same category, my man. You can't call the kettle black.
Right. That's right. You know, what do you think about, I mean, we've talked about it before, but I mean, as far as justifying what you were doing to people, I know your mother didn't approve of what you were doing when she found out, but you know, other people like that that maybe didn't agree with what you were doing. How did you handle those situations, and were those the kind of rationales you had in your mind, you know, as far as what you
were doing? You know, if anybody didn't agree with what I was doing, you get away from them. You know, you just don't see them, out of sight, out of mind. So, which was very few. I'm gonna tell you that right now. It was very few of them that didn't agree. You know, when my mom put me out the house, everybody tried to take me in. You know, like, oh, come stay with me, because you know, I, at that time, I never had an apartment or a house or anything. You know, so. I didn't really know what I was going to do, but I had $100,000 or more, and I was probably generating $2,000 or $3,000 every day, you know, and a nice portion of that was profit. So, you know, I was cash flow rich, you know, already. You know, I just didn't understand how to rent a house, you know, how to write a check, how to open up a bank account. You know, I didn't really understand none of that at the time, you know, so I was really ignorant to a lot of things. And the only thing I really did in the dope business was, well, really two things that I feel that made me win. And that was that I didn't smoke. You know, I was able to catch myself from smoking, and I don't steal from myself. You know, I don't take money out of the pot that I know is my re-up money. I kept my re-up money. And, you know, most people can't keep their re-up money. They can't stand to see, you know, $5,000, $10,000, you know, sitting there, you know, with nothing to do with it. And I was perfectly fine. You know, I'm perfectly fine with having money just sitting around.
Okay. So, yeah, just kind of like get into your, keep away from those people that don't agree, so you can kind of just not have to maybe deal with it.
I deal with their issues, you know, not hear what they felt your life should be.
Yeah.
You know, they're always giving good advice. And I agree now that the advice they gave me was the best advice that I could have got. You know, it was one or two people who gave me that advice. Great advice. You know, I wish I would have listened to him. But, you know, sometimes you got to learn the hard way. And for me, you know, my mom always said I was hard-headed. So
so when you first, like you were saying, you weren't familiar with renting houses and doing bank accounts and stuff. So did you kind of just figure that out on your own through trial and error? Or did you have anyone that really helped you kind of begin to learn all that stuff?
Well, Dave, you know, money buys you whatever you want in this world. pretty much. Yeah. You know, not everything, but what they don't buy, you know, you just use a Visa or MasterCard and you're good. No, you know, but money buys you knowledge. You know, when people know you got money, they come around. You know, and when they come around, they have to bring something to the table. You know, like when you come to the table and you want to eat and you didn't bring nothing, you know, you just showed up here. Like, so when they come, you know, they come with something. Now you got to figure out, you got to cipher through all of this stuff and figure out what's good and what's not good. You know, who bullshitting and who not bullshitting, because not only do it bring the deals, but it also bring the bullshit as well.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I found out about people is they don't mind stealing from drug dealers. Illegal people don't mind stealing from drug dealers. You know, they'll take their money and lie to them and cheat them and all kind of stuff, you know. It's crazy. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I want to go back to one of the other things you mentioned and talk about what happens in this episode with that, which is Pedro, you know, like you said, his cousin Lucia kills him because she found out he was a snitch. Now, you know, the tables are turned. She gets they get raided by the DEA. Right after she kills Pedro, she's calling Oso and letting him know everything's got taken care of. And they raid the warehouse and arrest Oso. And, you know, he's not talking or nothing. First, Lucia doesn't kind of, you know, cooperate, but then she decides to turn herself in for some reason. You know, so they're now, her and Oso are now being held by these DA agents. And basically they're like, I guess her plan is I'm going to tell on Teddy and his brother, because that's who the DA people say they really want. And I'm going to tell on them, you know, fuck them white boys, you know, her and Oso end up going along with the idea that they're going to set up Teddy. And even further, then as the episode goes on, then she just jumps in and agrees to set up Franklin when he calls, and the DEA is listening in and hearing about all of this, you know, gang war that might be starting if, you know, if Kev goes and kills the guy and all that. And all of a sudden now they're just snitching on Franklin just like that. So, I mean, that was a little, you know, that was a little strange. You know, I guess you could see
that's
that.
That's kind of how it works, though. You know, I believe, you know, because I know they when they raid, they'll take people's phones and take track of everybody who's calling. So I believe that's how they really work. You know, when soon as they find out about somebody, they want the informant to get that person as well.
Right. But what did you think about, I mean, Lucia is one thing, but also, you know, going along with the plan, at least to snitch on Teddy and his brother.
Well, my man Oso, you know, that's my man. I like Oso. I'm surprised. But not really. I mean, you know, when you're talking about this drug business, and if you really know the drug business, you know that the person that that you're doing whatever with today, you know, eating with, sleeping with, your mama, your daddy, your brother, they all vulnerable. Everybody is vulnerable to tell. You know, you don't ever know who. Out of the bunch, you know, one could play hard and you know, be a killer, and they still will tell. You know, I mean, I've saw so many different people come in there who turn, you know, to informants that is crazy. So,
Okay, so you could see also doing that at this time.
Yeah, and then with different cultures too, you know, like, you know, some people say it's okay to tell on this group, you know. Mm. You can tell on them, that's not really snitching. Or you can tell on, you know, on blacks, it's not really snitching, you know. So, like, Danilo didn't feel that it was snitching by setting me up.
Really?
People didn't treat it the same way. No, they don't treat it the same way.
Huh. How did you, you know, how did you get to feel that way about him or learn that about him, that he didn't think of it as snitching?
Some was said in the papers about that he just told on blacks or something like that. You know, he had told somebody over in Nicaragua, or maybe it was on a tape or something. But it came up in the paperwork that when he explained to his Nicaraguan counterparts that he only told on the blacks.
Since we're talking about Danilo, I think we could talk a little bit about what goes on with Teddy and the CIA in this episode, because that's a big part of the episode. You know, Teddy has found out that he's under investigation by these DEA people. He's trying to spook them. That didn't quite work. So he flew off to DC, left his brothers with the Colombian guys who kidnapped his brother and not treating him too well. We come to find out, but Teddy goes off to DC and he's trying to get in touch with his old boss. He's no longer there. He's freaking out. Eventually he gets his baby mom's attention. And she doesn't want to help him until he finally is like, well, I'm just going to go AWOL and just start telling everyone about all this stuff the CIA is doing. And she relays a message and a guy shows up to meet with him. Ultimately, he gets the assistance where the CIA guy agrees he's going to make the call to the DEA and have him squash the whole investigation. So, you know, Teddy's obviously relieved that's going on. And but there's a word, a term that they used in there that I made a note of and wanted to bring up, which is key to like your whole story, I think. And that was the term plausible deniability. So, you know, Teddy in the conversation with the CIA guy that he's having there is like, you know, they're talking about, well, how they're going to handle this and they're going to have to destroy his prior records of dealings with the prior boss. And they're going to have to, you know, downgrade his security clearance, different things. And Teddy's like, yeah, anything, you know, to give you guys plausible deniability. So plausible deniability, that is basically saying that, you know, you have a scenario that you can plausibly deny any knowledge about, because there's, you know, it's like, and this is why I say it's your case, because in a lot of ways, you know, everybody knows that the CIA was involved in, you know, the transportation and sale of cocaine into, you know, America, into Los Angeles, into black communities around country. But they've always denied it. They've never actually admitted it. There's, you know, a lot of evidence and it's like all the pieces are right there and it's pretty obvious to see, you know, what really happened, but they've maintained plausible deniability by, you know, covering certain tracks to make it to where there's no, you know, you might think that, but you can't prove it. And we have a credible way to take a position that, hey, we really didn't know about this stuff. So that I thought was an interesting topic for us just to talk about for a few minutes.
Yeah, well, it's kind of what the CIA used as their defense. And you're right, in my case. And their defense was, you know, eventually they admitted that they knew the Nicaraguan army was selling cocaine, but what their argument was is that they never sanctioned it, you know. So a lot could go into that argument, you know, with aiding and abetting. If they use the aiding and abetting law that they use with so many drug dealers who on a different side of the fence. But, you know, we know that, that there's a double standard. You know, if you don't have the resources, you know, and most blacks don't have the resources to actually put up the defense, you know, like with Trump, Trump got a special master to go over the papers. I mean, never heard of, you know, getting a special master to be able to go over the paperwork. So it's according to where you at financially. Your skin color definitely plays a role inside the court system. The court system is not justice is not blind to color. I'll be the first to let everybody know that. So I don't know, man. It's a lot to it. You know, with the 100-to-1, you know, times that they were sentencing everybody to, you know, when this whole thing first broke out. And it's so crazy, man. I was just thinking about, you know, how they're doing now with the opioid addiction. You know, they're allowing people who are addicted to opioids now to go to special housing right here on the street and not have to go through the jail time that so many of us had to go through who was involved with cocaine.
Yeah, man, it's just a lot. And I always say it, that's why, you know, your story is so critical to understanding the truth about a lot of things that have gone on in this country the past, you know, 30, 40 years. Yeah, this episode, I mean, there's another part of this episode now that I'm thinking about it, you know, that also I think speaks to the heart of your story and your situation, you know, this whole thing with the CIA and plausible deniability we just talked about, but the stuff with Wanda that we see in this episode. So, you know, Wanda robs the cookhouse. You know, Jerome gets the call.
That was funny. It take the whole crew to go find Wanda, right? Like, come on, man, stop. Right. Like they was going to get a killer or something. You know, they all ganged up. Oh, Wanda robbed the cookhouse with a pot.
Popped the guy over the head with a frying pan, they said, and man, ran off.
If somebody would have came to the spot and said something like that, we all would have been rolling. We'd have been all over the floor laughing and crying, you know, like, come on, man. How you let Wanda rob you with a pen? Get out of here. That would have been so funny to me, Dave. Boy, I would have. Yeah. Oh, that would have
been. But they weren't laughing. They were upset. And like you said, the whole gang, everybody
man.
Got ganged up to go address the Wanda problem.
Now that was one that I could have threw that scene out. Get out of here.
Yeah. But what, you know, I guess what I wanted to tie it in to is, you know, they are trying to show you the effects that crack addiction is having when they're showing you the people in her house and how they're acting and obviously what's going on with Wanda and then having to handcuff Wanda to the sink in the empty house. You know, Leon, you know, decides that's the only thing he can think of to do to deal with her. So, you know, they're really trying to get us as the viewers to, you know, get a look at how dangerous addiction to crack became and also how close to home it starts to hit for Franklin and the crew. And, you know, we've talked about that a little bit before, but, you know, I think that's a big part of, you know, your story is just, you know, tied all the time to the proliferation of the crack epidemic and the damages that addiction, you know, caused. So, again, this is kind of like an interesting episode that really goes to several of the core you know, things around your story. So I know I said a lot, but talk to me a little bit about Wanda and the, you know, the impact of addiction, what you saw and how you felt when it started to hit close to home.
Well, when we started to see people acting like Wanda's acting in this year was at least had to be 4 or 5 years after we was in the game. It takes a while for the addiction to really start to show itself with the crack. You know, it's a gradual process. But most people don't act like Wanda was acting when they get high. So don't get that. There's people who that can go and they call them functional addicts. I think that's what they call them. You know, people who go to work every day and you would never know they're high. But yeah, we start to notice it about 4 years after being in. You know, the people who really couldn't afford to be getting high. You know, the next thing they do is they turn to trying to become a cocaine. Well, and I believe too, Dave. Everybody eventually, when they go into it from the beginning, it's to hustle it. It's not to be a dope fiend. Most people go into it to hustle. Hustle the drug, and it's very easy to be persuaded to try it. You know, just test it, just see what it's like, because you're curious. You know, you're seeing all these people doing it, and you're like, I wonder what they're getting out of it. And when you wonder that, then the next thing you know is you want to sample it and see if you can get out of it what they're getting out of it, or I guess that's the scientist in us, you know, to experiment. I guess I'm not sure.
All right. So there's another thing I wanted to ask you about, which is, well, it starts with Franklin in the beginning, taking Leon and Kev to the houses he bought for them and surprising them. Here's the keys to your new cribs. You know, Leon's going nuts. And of course, Kev is acting a little funny because he's still, you know, he knows what he's done as far as selling out Franklin. And he's still got his mind on that and how he's going to handle that. But what'd you think about that move by Franklin to give them their own cribs?
I mean, that makes sense, you know, for your guys to have something nice. You know, you want your guys to be happy. You know, your employees, you got to definitely try to make them happy. So that was a good move by Franklin to give him a house.
Okay. So we follow that storyline really up into the ending of this episode, which is a wild scene at the end. I want to just break down and get into a little bit. So Kev, as we know, has found out where the Mexican guy that killed his cousin will be at this park, certain time, certain amount of time, certain time of day. Leon ends up confronting Kev, like, you know, I'm trying to reach you today. You ain't been getting back to me. And they meet up outside the houses. And that's when Kev kind of like spills the beans to Leon that, look, man, you know, I got the information on this guy. You know, Franklin knew all along who it was. He lied to us and, you know, fuck Franklin, basically. So he's off to the park to try to go kill this dude. Meanwhile, Leon runs back to Franklin. He lets him know what's going on. So they got to figure out, you know, how do we stop this? We got to get to Kev. Franklin ends up paging Lucia to try to find out more information because he figures it out. He's like, the woman, Kev had said something about the woman had told him And Franklin puts it together. Oh, so he must have gone to Lucia because he knew how bad Lucia wanted that recipe, how she had come to him begging for it. So she's like, damn. He's like, you know, obviously Lucia got the Kev. That's what's going on. So he pages her. And like we talked about earlier, she's in the DEA office having this conversation with him. But it results in Lucia getting in the car with the DEA agent lady to drive down to the scene of this thing, basically by themselves with no backup and nothing. And Lucia is supposed to sit there and point out Franklin and Leon to the DEA. Franklin does find out from her where this is going down. So him and Leon rush down there and pull up just as Kev is getting there and about to go take care of his business. So it's a lot going on. And the show ends with Kev basically saying, you know, Franklin, you know, I can't trust you. You fucked us over. You lied. You sold us out. You know, you didn't do nothing to protect your family. And, you know, I can't fuck with you. And I got to do what I got to do. He heads down, fires one shot off at the guy. And the next thing, Franklin shoots him from the back. We don't know where he hit him. And that's how the episode ends. The DEA agent runs up on Kev, who's bleeding on the ground. Franklin and Leon speed off, trying to get away. And the Mexican gang guy, he's running off with his daughter. And he sees Lucia sitting in the cop car on the side. So it was a wild scene. A lot to
Yes, unpack. It was. Yes, it was.
So tell me what your thoughts are.
Well, the first thing, the DA agent never would have went out there by herself like that. You know, knowing that it was a potential gang situation, guns. Attempted murder, suspected murder. Police would have been surrounded that whole place like you never seen before. I don't know. The one with Franklin and Kev, I guess that could have been possible that he would shoot Kev to stop him from, you know, just so much stuff that just adds up, man. It gets to just like, you know, it's just like too much, you know, too Hollywood, you know, too many coincidences. Just a little overboard on those. Some exciting scenes, though, you know, it definitely stuff that will keep the audience, you know, on the edge. But I just think that it's too far-fetched, you know, to be real life.
Okay. Yeah, definitely, you know, the whole Lucia just driving down there with the DA, two of them by themselves, that was crazy.
Yeah. And you're talking about a major cartel bus, you know, I don't know, just not normal DA agents. You know, when they busted us that time, when we were trying to buy the 100 keys from them, man, it had to be 40 cops. And they were laying down in seats and in vans. And, you know, like, I just see that whole park, you know, the whole park being surrounded with undercovers and so forth.
Yeah. So, you know, we got a lot of questions, you know, on our mind as we close this episode out. You know, Teddy's on his way back home. He's, you know, going to save the day by getting the DEA pulled off the case. So we don't know how that's going to play out. Where's that going to lead?
Remember, he's feeding the DEA the Colombians.
Right. So he's giving them up.
Yeah, he's giving the lead. Colombians up.
Yes,
he already told him that they got some Colombians, some
Cali cartel.
Yeah.
Cali cartel bosses. Yeah. So he's going to basically turn them in, get them set up. But where is that going to leave Lucia? And also, you know, where is that going to leave, you know, Franklin and the guys? You know, it's a lot of interesting things heading into the last two episodes. This was number 8, so we got 2 more before the season's over. And what's going to happen with Kev? Like, you know, what we just see him, you know, bleed in with the DEA lady over him. So we don't know what's going to happen with him and how that's going to play out. So
we know he got attempted murder already.
Sure.
For shooting sure. that the guy with all the kids, maybe 3 or 4 attempted murders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because each one of those kids, everybody was in that direction, you know, was, you know, could yeah. be contempt on them.
So, yeah. Yeah.
And I think she saw him shoot, didn't she? I don't know for sure, but they didn't really say. But she had to see something because she ran right to him as soon as Franklin shot him.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, lots to look forward to. We got 2 more episodes before we can close out season 2. We'll be back next week. With After the Snow, talk to you guys about what happens next and what else is going on in our worlds. As always, appreciate you guys joining us for the ride and, you know, listening to what we got going on, what we think about all this stuff. You know, shout us out, you know, go on Breakbeat Media. At Breakbeat Media, go on Rick's page or my page. Send us some, you know, little comments. Yeah,
send me some comments. We'll check them out.
Let us know anything want us to talk about.
You know, I'm looking for a rap artist too, man. Help me find somebody. I know you found some of the biggest guys in the business, man.
Okay.
I want to get into the music a little bit.
Okay. I thought you had an artist.
We're talking to a few people. We're talking to a few people. But I know you done help find some of the biggest ones in the game. You know that game like nobody else.
No doubt. That story is going to be told soon, too. Unsigned Hype, 8-part podcast documentary series coming your way. We're almost done with it. We're going to announce the release date, but it's going to be an incredible story to tell of how myself and The Source discovered Biggie, Common, DMX, Mobb Deep, Eminem, Capone Noriega, J Electronica, and many, many others through the Unsigned Hype column. So stay tuned for that.
I knew that magazine was going to do some big stuff when I first saw it, man. Yeah. 2 pages. Yeah. I was like, this thing going somewhere.
Well, I hope you have that same feeling about Breakbeat.
We're already going, man.
Yeah.
You got Marco, he can't stay off the internet. He's always trending, man. Every time I flick my page on there, Marco is.
Yeah, man. Yeah, he's doing his thing.
He's heating up right now, man. You did good with Marcos.
Yeah, we got a great lineup, man. I think all of our talent and our shows are incredible, and I think they're just going to keep growing. So yeah, we are doing well, but you know, I hope Breakbeat will continue to grow and have a kind of impact that The Source once had, you know, in the future years to come. So appreciate you.
I got appreciate some ideas I got to run by you too, but I've been so damn busy, Dave. I don't even get to. It's crazy, man. It's been just crazy. You know, all next week, Echo just tell me I'm going on next week. I'm like, man, don't I get to stay in LA for a day or two, you know, go play some tennis with the kids.
Right.
But yeah, I got some stuff I want to run by you too.
Okay.
I'll get some time.
Okay. Let's do it.
All right,
y'all. Appreciate it. After the Snow, Breakbeat Media. Peace out, y'all.
I'm going to hit that gym right fast.
Yeah. Me too.
Peace, y'all. Safe weekend.